Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all. I know it's December, but it doesn't really feel like December. So for those of you who've been with us for a while, you know we follow the lectionary, the church calendar. And so this Sunday marks the beginning of Advent. And we're invited into this season of anticipation, right, leading up to the birth of Jesus. And so it's an opportunity just to reflect on a season of darkness before the light comes. And the idea that we'll be exploring in our text today is being awake. All right, so before we jump in, I want to give you a chance just to discuss this question with someone next to you. And it's going to be a little deeper than our normal questions, but we'll give it a try. All right, but what it was a wake-up call moment that you've had. Okay, it could be something small, maybe getting your first speeding ticket, maybe, you know, visiting another country, or something more meaningful, you know, maybe something health-related or work-related, but something that opened your eyes, right, and made you more aware about yourself or just the world around you. Right? Does it make sense? All right, let's give it a try. All right, so I'll give you a moment to discuss that with someone next to you. All right. So it sounds like there was a lot going on there. Seems like more waking up than I was imagining. Anybody willing to share wake-up call moment? A major breakup? Okay, yeah. Oh, I feel you. I feel you. Anything else? Wake-up call moment? Someone dying? Yeah, so being away in the military for over a year. Okay. Our current politics. There you go. Finding out you're pregnant. That'll wake you up. So for me, getting introduced to the Enneagram actually led me to a bigger awareness of myself. So for those of you who are unfamiliar, the Enneagram is a typology system. It's kind of like a personality tool that we've been discovering together as a community here. And, you know, I've always thought of myself as just a laid-back guy, right? Just chill, easygoing, you know, nothing gets under my skin. I pretty much can get along with anyone, which, you know, can be a good thing. And so when I learned that I was actually a peacemaker, it made sense. Because I'm all about just creating inclusive environments, maintaining peace, you know, mediating conflicts. And so, you know, Rachel and I were listening to this Enneagram podcast, and they were talking about the peacemaker. And it got to the part where they're talking about the shadow side or the struggle of a peacemaker. And they basically summed it up in one word, sloth. And so Rachel kind of looks at me and she's like, oh, it all makes sense now. That's why I can be so frustrated with you sometimes when things don't get done. And I had never really made that connection before. And as embarrassing and uncomfortable as that was, I think I had to acknowledge and name that a lot of times, sometimes I'm just lazy, right? And that was a wake-up call for me. You know, sometimes it might seem like it's an amazing ability that I have that nothing can bother me. But I think what it actually is that it's an unhealthy pattern of me choosing the lazy route of not engaging and running away from conflict. And so that was a new awareness that really helped me in how I interacted in my marriage, with my friends, with my family. And, you know, as we enter Advent, it's a season that signifies that an awakening is about to happen, right? That Jesus coming to earth was meant to awaken the hope that many people had lost. You know, they were living under a state of oppression for generations, for centuries, just waiting, right? Waiting for this Messiah that still hadn't shown up yet. And so for Jesus, his birth, it would hopefully open their eyes and make them aware that God still did care for them, that he was actually there with them, but in a completely different and unexpected way. And so in our text for this morning, you know, Jesus invites us to be awake, to become aware of some things that maybe we've been blind to or asleep to, you know, waking up from things like our privilege or maybe gender or race equality. For Jesus, he understood, right, what it meant to be woke, even back in his day. And so the question I want us to consider this morning is that as we enter this season of Advent, you know, what is Jesus inviting us to wake up to and to wake up from? And with that new awareness, how can we live differently in this season? So we're going to be in Mark 13, verses 30 to 37. And as is our custom here, go ahead and read that with a neighbor aloud, and I'll give you a moment to do that. All right, so if we look at what Jesus talks about leading up to this text, we see that he gives this apocalyptic description of the future, right? And he talks about how people are going to be under great distress, the sun is going to go dark, then the moon is going to go dark, and then the stars are going to fall out of the sky, planets are going to shake, you know, your typical end of the world stuff. And, you know, I think a lot of us carry some baggage when it comes to apocalyptic texts. You know, for me growing up, you know, I would kind of read that with a lens of fear, which would then generate a lot of guilt, right? It's like, Jesus is coming back soon, you better get your act together, stop downloading illegal MP3s, right? I mean, that was kind of the main takeaway. And there was also this focus on predicting, you know, who the major players were going to be, right? When the exact date was going to be for the end of the world. But in verse 30, he says, "Truly I tell you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place," right? All that end of the world stuff. "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But about that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. Beware, keep alert, for you do not know when the time will come." And, you know, throughout Scripture, the point of apocalyptic text wasn't meant to generate fear, but it was really meant to remind us that God exists outside of time and space, right? That his promises will not pass away, they're eternal. And even though we have issues and problems that can be overwhelming here, they're finite. And God's promise to be with us is timeless. And so maybe we're invited during this Advent season to wake up to the timelessness of God and to consider how to live at God's pace. You know, Peter wrote about this as well in one of his letters when he wrote, "Don't overlook the obvious here, friends. With God, one day is as good as 1,000 years. 1,000 years is a day. God isn't late with his promise as some measure lateness. He is restraining himself on account of you, holding back the end because he doesn't want anyone lost. He's giving everyone space and time to change." And so, you know, God's operating from timelessness. And since the limits of time don't apply to him, right, God's able to extend patience over a longer period of time. And it allows space for God's restraint. And this creates a whole new, different pace of living. You know, for Jesus, when he came to earth, I know it was a product of the time period he was living in, but, you know, he modeled this pace of life that involved walking from town to town, from just living and being present in villages. And us, on the other hand, today, right, we operate out of, you know, impatient timelines, prioritizing efficiency so that we can make more time to do more things. And we get pulled into this this rushed pace of having to multitask and trying to squeeze as much as we can out of one day. And if we're really truly to be awake and pay attention, I think it requires us to slow down this unsustainable pace that we've adopted.
And so what does it mean for us to operate in the timelessness of God? How do we live at God's pace? There's a pastor named Matt Canlis, who's currently out in Washington State. And he had spent 13 years in Scotland. And he recently put out this documentary just capturing his time and his journey in Scotland. And he talked about how when he first started trying to become a pastor, he was just running through life, just trying to get to something else. And he began to realize that he was missing out on a lot because he was just running through life. And so his mentor, Eugene Peterson, suggested that if he really wanted to learn what it meant to be a pastor, that he should consider leaving the country. And so Matt and his wife, they were given an opportunity to move to Scotland. And so they began this journey of pastoring this parish in a small, remote village called Methlick. And he described that he immediately noticed how jarring the slower pace of life was and how he had to adjust, how he had to intentionally change his pace of life. And so here's a clip just with some of his reflections as well as some thoughts from Eugene Peterson and N.T. Wright.
In the beginning, this fishbowl world was a little bit scary. I can't say oppressive, but I was kind of thinking, my goodness, they can see everything I'm doing. When I watched how Colin would listen to me or to somebody else or take the time to visit someone, I realized I would need to make a whole lot more time than I used to be present with people.
Now, maybe the slowing down just has to do with more of a habit of being there. But something has to happen. You can't just rush through life. One of the things that technology makes it more difficult for us to do is that there's so much quick information. And if you don't get quick information, you probably think, well, forget about it. Somebody else will figure it out. But nobody's going to figure out somebody's name. You've got to pay attention for that.
Some years ago, there was a theologian who wrote a book called 3 Mile an Hour God, because basically we walk, most humans walk, roughly 3 miles an hour. The thought of traveling at only 3 miles an hour fills most of us with horror now. If we are walking, if we are going at 3 miles an hour, we are going at a much more, if you like, humane pace. And we can, there is time to process what we're seeing and what we're experiencing and smelling and knowing. And then the thought that maybe, if we are made in the image of God, maybe this is why we sometimes get so frustrated with God. We want God to go at 60 miles an hour. If I see what I want God to do, I want to do it right now. And in fact, God is walking slowly around Palestine, around Galilee. God is doing what God is doing in God's time. And maybe if we were prepared to slow down a bit, look who's talking, we might actually be able, paradoxically, finally to catch God up.
The idea of slowing down to catch up with God is counterintuitive. It makes no sense. People used to wish each other well with the expression, Godspeed to you, by which they meant, we hope it goes quickly. Maybe God's speed really is 3 miles per hour. And if we walk with him, we will let him know us and let other people know us too.
It's profound, right? It is counterintuitive that we need to slow down in order to catch up with God. And so for us, what would it look like to live out of a different framework of time? Right? How might we slow down in order to catch up with 3 mile per hour God? You know, maybe a practice we can try this Advent season is just to slow down our physical pace of life. You know, maybe that means walking to places. Maybe that means picking the longest line to wait in at H-E-B or Whole Foods. You know, maybe that means putting together a meal from scratch instead of ordering takeout. And as we slow down, you know, perhaps we can actually wake up to knowing God in a more timeless way. And that'll allow us to know others and to be known by others in a fuller and deeper way. And so Jesus said, heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. And then he continues in verse 34. It is like a man going on a journey. When he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. And so Jesus gives this analogy of a property owner who goes out of town and then leaves his home into the hands of housekeepers. And so the expectation is that they'll actively engage their responsibilities, right? And not passively wait around while the owner is gone. And these housekeepers are asked to work within the house, right? To keep it in order, to keep watch, to protect the interior of this house. And so for us, what could our work be during this Advent season? Right? What if our work is to pay attention to our interior life, to do some housekeeping on our soul? And maybe we're invited to wake up to the interior work that needs some attention. I know it's easy for us to be busy and engaged when it comes to working on our exterior shell. You know, most of our lives we're investing our time and energy into building up, you know, and working on our status or our image or recognition. And yet Jesus had this ongoing dialogue with the religious leaders of his time and just, you know, kept pointing out the obvious discrepancy between their exterior life and their interior life. And he would call them out on how much effort they were putting into their appearance and their actions, but they were paying no attention to their interior life, which ended up making them hypocrites and frauds. And for us, right, if we take a step back and honestly examine like where our time and energy goes, like how does it break out between what we put towards our exterior life versus our interior? Is it 50-50? Be 75 exterior, 25 interior, or maybe even 90 exterior, 10 interior. And I think what makes it difficult is that we get so much more feedback when we invest in our exterior life. But the challenge for us is to actually move away from letting our exterior life define who we are. This is how Thomas Merton reflects on this. He says, it is useless to try to make peace with ourselves by being pleased with everything we have done. In order to settle down in the quiet of our own being, we must learn to be detached from the results of our own activity. We must withdraw ourselves to some extent from effects that are beyond our control and be content with the goodwill and the work that are the quiet expression of our inner life. We must be content to live without watching ourselves live, to work without expecting an immediate reward, to love without an instantaneous satisfaction, and to exist without any special recognition. And I think in order, you know, for us to devote time to our interior life and to detach it from that exterior shell, like Merton is saying, it will require us to slow down, to create space and time to actually devote to the interior work of things like gratitude or joy or peace or empathy or compassion or contentment. And that requires us to be intentional and to be watchful about how we need to do some housekeeping on our interior soul. A few years ago, we rented out our house on Airbnb. It was during South By, and this was the first time we'd ever done this. And, you know, we just wanted to escape the craziness of Austin for a week. And so we decided to leave town. And there was some radio station team from Chicago that ended up renting our place. And they said that 10 people were going to stay. And so we left town. And then we had our friend meet them and let them in the house. And so he texts me, he says, hey, they're here. Looks like a lot more than 10 people. And so I replied just kind of jokingly, oh, really? Does it look like they're going to trash the place? And he replied, actually, yes. So turns out there were over 20 people who showed up in this big school bus that was painted black with the words party bus on the side. And so we get home after that week, and it's a disaster. I mean, there were like wine stains on the rug, mud tracks everywhere. There was dog poop in the house. So apparently some of the girls had picked up some stray dogs during the week. And they also used Clementine's crib to crate the dogs, which is horrible. But thank you, security deposit. It was miserable. And for them, you know, taking care, cleaning the house, you know, making proper use of the furniture wasn't even on their minds, right? They had no intention. They had no desire to actually take care of the interior of our house. And that experience is the complete opposite of what Jesus is inviting us to consider, right? Slightly. He said that it's like a man going on a journey, and when he leaves home and puts his servants in charge, each with his work, and commands the doorkeeper to be on the watch. And so for us, maybe a practice that we can try this Advent season is just to remind ourselves of the housekeeping that we need to do in our interior life. Something that a spiritual director once suggested was to set a periodic alarm throughout the day. So, you know, maybe use your calendar or your reminders app and you create just a recurring event, right? One in the morning, one in the afternoon, one in the evening, and just set different reminders, right? Things like awaken to gratitude or awaken to peace or awaken to joy, awaken to empathy, awaken to compassion, awaken to contentment, right? Whatever interior work needs to be done, you can come up with some different ideas. But as those reminders go off throughout the day, it's an invitation for us to wake up to the interior work that might need some housekeeping. And then we close in verse 35. Therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the owner of the house will come, in the evening, or at midnight, or when the rooster crows, or at dawn, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all, keep awake. And, you know, if we keep reading after this text here, we see that Mark actually goes straight into the passion narrative of Jesus and his journey to the cross. And what's ironic is that, you know, Jesus has just talked about staying awake. And he is and his disciples, they go to the garden to pray. And his disciples, of course, fall asleep. And this happens three times. And Jesus goes back and wakes them up to pray. And then he leaves, comes back only to find them asleep again. And to be fair, it was probably late at night. And they had no awareness of what was about to happen to Jesus. But maybe their falling asleep was a symbol of their indifference towards prayer at that moment. And for us, you know, during this Advent season, maybe we're invited to wake up from indifference. You know, to be awakened to the areas or the people or the practices that we've become apathetic towards. There's a book called Acedia and Me, written by Kathleen Norris. Anyone familiar with what acedia is? There you go, a couple people. It's not a very common word or concept, but it was originally used and still is in monastic circles. And, you know, at a basic level, you could say that acedia is a state of apathy or sloth or just the absence of care. And she gives this great description based on a reflection from a 4th century monk. And this monk, Evagrius Ponticus, described acedia this way. He wrote, "Acedia made it seem that the sun barely moves, if at all, and that the day is 50 hours long. Boredom tempts him to look constantly out the windows, to walk outside the cell, to gaze carefully at the sun to determine the lunch hour. When he reads, he yawns plenty and easily falls into sleep. He rubs his eyes and stretches his arms. His eyes wander from the book. He stares at the wall and then goes back to his reading for a while. He then wastes his time hanging on to the end of words, counts the pages, ascertains how the book is made, finds fault with the writing and the design. Finally, he just shuts it and uses it as a pillow, as would I. Then he falls asleep into a sleep not too deep, because hunger wakes his soul up, and he begins to concern himself with that. I definitely appreciate his honest assessment. But this was the real struggle for those who practiced a contemplative lifestyle and a monastic lifestyle, where the rhythm was the same every single day. And they had committed to a lifetime of prayer, of solitude, of contemplation. And the challenge was to stay engaged day in and day out. But this is also something, you know, we deal with as well. And this is how Kathleen Norris puts it. She says, acedia is the monk's temptation because in a demanding life of prayer, it offers the ease of indifference. Yet I have come to believe that acedia can strike anyone whose work requires self-motivation and solitude, anyone who remains married for better, for worse, anyone who is determined to stay true to a commitment that is sorely tested in everyday life. And that's pretty much all of us, right? This ease of indifference is what keeps us from living the way God intended us to live, right? And how have we experienced that ease of indifference in our relationships, or in our journey of faith, or in our vocation? You know, one of the things that Kathleen finds helpful in combating acedia and her indifference is the practice of new beginnings. And even though beginning something again can seem like a failure, it actually gives freedom from whatever expectations that we or other people have put on us. And I think what's helpful about that practice is that it actually lowers our standards, but in a healthy way. Because, you know, sometimes our indifference has built up so much over time that we just can't see a way to jump back in to where we were with a specific individual, or with our spiritual practices, or, you know, with our physical health. And maybe starting from the beginning, maybe just at a basic level, will allow us to wake up from that indifference. There was an 8th century Syrian monk named Joseph Azariah, who at one point said that he suddenly lost his ability to pray. And he described his acedia that it was so intense that he no longer even wanted to think about God again. And so his indifference and his apathy led to despair. And he decided that he was going to leave the monastery as a failed monk. But suddenly he said he received this, what he called an internal inspiration, to just stay in his monastery cell. And then when it came time for their daily prayers, he would just recite Psalm 117, which is the shortest psalm in all of scripture. It's like all of two verses, so two short lines, which is both, you know, hilarious, but also brilliant. And it worked for him, right? It allowed him to wake up from his indifference towards prayer at that season. And for someone like myself who struggles with apathy, with sloth, you know, the season of Advent is a reminder. It's an invitation to awaken from my own indifference. Because Jesus said, therefore, keep awake, for you do not know when the owner of the house will come, or else he may find you asleep when he comes suddenly. And what I say to you, I say to all. Keep awake. And so as we close, you know, I know as a community, Vox, we've been observing Advent for over 10 years now. And for some of you, you might have been even doing that longer. And sometimes with familiarity comes indifference. And it might be easy for us to sleepwalk through the next few weeks. But I hope that we can enter this season of Advent together as a community, fully awake. You know, every year on New Year's Eve, my kids get super excited about staying awake because they want to get to the next year just past midnight. And they'll fight off any suggestion that they need to sleep early that night. And I hope that we can have the same type of anticipation this Advent season, that we would stay awake in order to slow down, do some interior work, and anticipate the hope that comes with Jesus being here on earth. And so let me close with this blessing from John O'Donohue. And so, Vox, during this Advent season, may you awaken to the mystery of being here and enter the quiet immensity of your own presence. May you have joy and peace in the temple of your senses. May you receive great encouragement when new frontiers beckon. May you respond to the call of your gift and find the courage to follow its path. May the flame of anger free you from falsity. May warmth of heart keep your presence aflame, and may anxiety never linger about you. May your outer dignity mirror an inner dignity of soul. May you take time to celebrate the quiet miracles that seek no attention. May you be consoled in the secret symmetry of your soul, and may you experience each day as a sacred gift woven around the heart of wonder. And so we ask all this in the compassion of God the Creator, the mercy of Jesus the Son, and the empathy of the Spirit. Amen.